I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks very much for joining me. This is Like It Is. Today, my guest is Charles Hanson. Hanson has over two decades of experience in nonprofit leadership. He specializes in program management for community, recreational, and youth services in San Mateo, California. He emphasizes ethical service, mutual trust, and a genuine commitment to personal and professional excellence. I recently sat down with Charles for an interview. Here's that conversation.
Let's talk about your decades of experience in nonprofit leadership. And as you reflect upon the question, share with our audience what has been the most important or the most revolutionary or change that has occurred in nonprofit. Is it the funding, lack of funding, or is it something else other than funding?
I think that's where it starts. I like to use the saying, no money, no mission. In the nonprofit world, obviously the mission comes first, your participants, your customers, the community, all of that is at the forefront. That is the reason that myself and so many get into the nonprofit sphere, and that is to serve. And you cannot do that without the funding, without the backing. So I would say everything changed, including the nonprofit world post-COVID. We're on the other side of it, so to speak. And when you look at our funding stream, when you look at funding streams, I wouldn't say that they've dried up, but going after them is a lot different. Organizations have changed how they give funding, which, depending on the nonprofit you work with, could be a positive or it could be a negative. Fortunately, at Peninsula Family Service, we have a vast suite of programs, and we have a lot of those programs that are around power building, amplifying the community. So in that way, we're kind of in a good spot. But yes, I would say funding is always going to be at the top of the list. And within that, I would say second is here in the Bay Area. We all know the cost of living. Being able to provide a livable wage for your staff would be right after funding.
So what are some of the creative ways that, in dealing with post, COVID, the challenges created as a result of COVID, what are the new or are there new strategies, approaches to bring some of those funders, donors back into the nonprofit sector regarding supporting and financially supporting organizations?
So I would say a lot more of the foundations, the organizations, as I mentioned, they are looking for power building, but they're looking through that through data-informed decisions. And with that, the storytelling is not as at the forefront as it used to be. Nonprofit storytelling used to be number one. Then the numbers that reflect the impact. More organizations, more foundations, grants, the opportunity. It's much, much, much more data driven, in my opinion. So they're looking at the numbers and making decisions that way, because I think they want to get the biggest impact. And even though the narrative and the storytelling describes that, they want to see it in the business world, they want to see it in hard numbers. So I would just say having a data department or an evaluation department is paramount for going after funding, different funding streams.
I think leadership is important as well in a nonprofit situation, in any organizational setting, in terms of the challenges, financial challenges, economic challenges, not perhaps having competitive salaries. So I think the leader is very important in terms of spearheading his or her organization. I'm curious to know, what is your definition of a good leader or good leadership?
I would take kind of the leadership definition in a way to describe it as what I look for in a leader and what I try to emulate. And that would be a transformative leader. And as you said, it should be the case in all in all business, nonprofit or for profit, but specifically in the nonprofit world, you have to learn how to get the most out of your people. And I've been fortunate enough where I've had amazing teams like the current one I work with at Peninsula Family Service, and everyone is on the same page. And I think partly that comes top down from the leadership. It's not only being a transformative leader, it's open communication and being able to listen. I would be remiss if I was the one making all the decisions, but my decisions are made primarily from the information that I collect from the community. And the only way I can do that is by listening to my team. So I think just being able to be an effective communicator, a great listener, and that's the way you're going to be able to transform organizations, transform communities, and impact neighborhoods, communities, and lives.
Well, I want to get to the loneliness campaign in a second, but I want to stay with leadership. How does leadership, in your view, assist the young people in our community in terms of being able to have young people, our youth, follow good leadership?
Oh, that's absolutely paramount. Having someone that they can look up to, that they can see themselves in. It's not just about talking the talk. You have to walk the walk. So you have to, the things you expect out of people, obviously you have to model that behavior. And I think that modeling whatever you would consider excellent or good behavior or servant behavior, when you think about like having a servant heart, when you think about nonprofit, you have to be able to model that so the youth can see what is possible, you know, through the work. And I think that within the work that we do in the community, we're on all the time. There is no time off. You're always representing your organization. Obviously, you're representing yourself, but you're always representing your organization. So being able to model that behavior so the youth can see that, especially in our early learning program, is huge, because those are some of the biggest developmental years is in our early learning program. And having a positive role model for those kids to look up to and their teachers is huge.
The loneliness campaign, and I just read about this and was just intrigued by the notion that loneliness could be or is a health issue, could be defined as such. And I would like to have you maybe talk a bit more about the loneliness campaign or initiative, or what's that all about and where's it going or where has it gone, if anywhere?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Loneliness is a significant public health issue that affects people of all ages. At Peninsula Family Service, we recently launched an Overcoming Loneliness with Care and Connections initiative to address this concern. There's kind of three key components in this initiative. The first is raising awareness. We've already started launching a comprehensive campaign. We're getting the word out. We've had speaking engagements. We've done articles, podcasts like this one to in June, because that is Loneliness Awareness Month. This includes community outreach, education, and one of the biggest things is kind of destigmatizing loneliness and promote social connection. The second component is expanding our peer counseling program. We've had a very successful peer counseling program for our older adults for years. And this program provides weekly one-on-one meetings and group support to help participants build social connection, reduce feelings of isolation. We aim to double the number of participants and peer counselors within this year. Particularly focus on those underserved populations, such as older African Americans, LGBTQIA plus adults, and Pacific Islanders. The third key component is creating a replicable model, where we are working with the county, the University of California in San Francisco, to track and document the effectiveness of our program. And our goal is to create a toolkit that other communities can use to combat loneliness in their area.
So this is a silent problem, a silent issue until now?
Yes, I think the stigma around loneliness has been one a lot of people have kind of dealt with alone. I liken it to when you start, for those who've come back and started any athletic endeavor or have gone, the first year in higher education, and you're kind of by yourself and you think you're the only one going through it, and it feels awful. And then one person says, "Oh, I'm having trouble with this homework, or I'm having trouble with this drill." And then you're like, "Oh, me too." It's kind of like that. Loneliness is affecting more people than we even realize. And I mean, just in our impact after people enroll in our program is just profound. Like 92% of participants report reduced loneliness, 89% experience less stress, 85% feel more optimistic about life. So having these one-on-one conversations and these group conversations does highlight that the impact that, I mean, that the program does work, and having that connection does work. It's just getting the word out and destigmatizing it so it doesn't feel like such a bad thing to say that you're feeling lonely.
I spoke with a young rapper, a hip hop person who expressed to me that, he was going through loneliness challenges and all of that. And so I suggested to him, maybe creatively, why don't you produce a song, a clean hip hop type song that spoke about, that speaks about the impact of loneliness, and maybe that might impact many, many other young people out there, because of course hip hop is a music that of the younger generation, and that might be a way of getting the message out about, the impact of loneliness, and that loneliness can be overcome if only by communicating with one another. So he said he'd think about it, and we'll see what comes out of it, if anything.
Well, I hope he does it, because as I mentioned, raising awareness is kind of the first and foremost to our campaign. And I mean, music has power, and hopefully this musician does put it out and other people connect with it, and then they realize, like I mentioned, that they aren't alone, and there are so many individuals dealing with this. Especially again, coming out of the pandemic when we were all isolated. I hope he or she does put out that song, that record.
Well, I tell you, I will. If he doesn't, I certainly will search to find some creative person out there that won't mind collaborating to get the message, a healthy message out there that's
Yes.
positive and actually pushing positive thoughts and all.
Yes, absolutely. Because positivity is the message. The sooner, you realize that, oh, this thing that I'm feeling is the feeling of loneliness, and you start talking about it, the easier it is to get out in front of it, and then it doesn't fester into anything more serious. So yes, the positive side of that would be amazing.
If you ever find yourself away from your favorite radio station, you can find this episode of Like It Is and many more on your favorite podcast app.
Let's talk about ethics, the importance of ethics in a leader, the importance of ethics in an organization. Ethics certainly translates into a community having trust and confidence in that individual or that organization. Speak a bit about the importance of ethics and being ethical, from your perspective.
I think it's huge. I think that's what you go to. There's nothing else left. Being able to operate in an ethical way, whether it's personal or professional, I think that's paramount to make sure that whomever you're dealing with is on the up and up. And if you most of the time you have to build up that collateral and that trust, but I think ethics and trust go hand in hand. And the more the person trusts you, and the more you can build their confidence in you, and they see that you are like an ethical person, then there won't be any question. You'll be above reproach, and they understand that, whether it's in your professional dealings or your personal dealings, that what this person says can be taken to the bank. That's through being transparent and honest in all your dealings. That's holding yourself and your team accountable, commitment to ethical service, creating a positive work environment. I think all these are inclusive in creating an ethical, whether it be person, workplace, organization.
Do you think the public's trust has been stretched, to say the least, regarding, I guess, the institutional credibilities, as we watch newscasts and we see the questioning of the institution's credibility, the ethics of being called into question on a national, statewide level? Do you think that that has impacted public trust, public credibility, and perhaps it underscores the importance even more so of having good ethics and being transparent, as you just said?
I would agree with that. I think over the course of the last, I don't know, five to 7 years, institutions have kind of lost credibility. I think one, due to kind of their own missteps, but also when you look at how much information is out there, it's a lot tougher to kind of understand and disseminate what's real and what's not. There's a lot of misinformation, misdirection, and to your point, I think that just doubles down on the need to be ethical. I think if we think about it on a lower level, you have to build back up that trust. I think institutions now start with a level of skepticism. People look at them with a level of skepticism. So I think you think about, you know, 2 decades ago, there was a certain just inherent trust in those institutions that have been around for centuries. And now I think a lot of that shine has worn off. And I think they operate kind of with, like I said, the community looks at it with skepticism. And you just have to start bringing that up. And I think the best way to do that is through like just the transparency and honesty.
Well, we got a few more minutes left, and boy, time has flown in this session here, but there's a couple more points I want to get your feedback on. You are, as you said, you're passionate about fostering a culture of value and engagement. What does that mean?
With engagement, I think that goes kind of to inclusivity, listening to individuals with different lived experience. I walk into situations, into meeting someone with the lens of this person can teach me something. I'm going to walk away having learned something from each individual I encounter, talk to. And I think more, not just nonprofit, but more people, more organizations as a whole should operate from that lens, because then you get more people at the table, and stats, statistics, data, all of it shows the more people you have, the more people you have at the table with different lived experiences, ethnic, race, religion, gender, the better off you are. So that's how I see engagement, just getting more people involved in whatever it is you're trying to do, trying to accomplish, trying to communicate. I think that's key.
Talk about the importance of the inclusion of diverse communities and the importance of them experiencing Juneteenth and having a better, hoping to get a better understanding of what Juneteenth is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. There, I think the most important thing is that we're putting this event on to celebrate community, and within that community comes a broad spectrum of individuals. I think specifically to the event, obviously the more the merrier, but in a more community-based look, having different different ethnicities, different races, different voices out there, is what it's all about. Getting to learn something that you may otherwise would not have had the chance. Amplifying different voices. I think it's a day, obviously, to recognize, to celebrate, but it's also an opportunity to learn. And it's very rare that you have opportunities to go and learn from people with lived experiences, like the historian that I was speaking of, George Palmer, and kind of get a better understanding of why this day is so important to African-Americans and American history as a whole.
And we don't have to wait for Juneteenth or February to learn about history, right?
Absolutely. History is something that should be studied. I mean, you learn from history. As I was mentioning, getting an opportunity to learn is paramount, to make sure that you are educated and that you do understand, and that it's not centralized to February or Juneteenth. African-American history is American history, and just like American history that is learned throughout the year, having an opportunity to highlight American history through the lens of African-Americans, I view it as a privilege.
You're taking the leadership of this event that's going to occur on Juneteenth. What would you like to say or believe will be, you know, success? How will you spell success as a result of, after you sitting down and reflecting upon the events of Juneteenth? What will spell success to you, or how will success look or feel to you?
Me personally, I think sitting down after the event, taking a look back, reflecting, I think if we were able to reach members of the San Mateo community, as I mentioned, that otherwise wouldn't have any clue about what Juneteenth actually represents. If it's just one person, that's a success. Obviously, we would love, you know, to hit the hundreds, even thousands. But if we're able to reach just one person, and we have, you know, a handful of people walk away having a better understanding of Juneteenth and what it really means, and having an appreciation of African-American history after going through the African Village experience, then that's absolutely a success.
The next question, maybe the final question, deals with where you've been and where you're going. Life and lived experiences along your journey that have prepared you for today's challenges and future challenges. What would some of those experiences, lived experiences, be?
I would say my journey through all. I've been fortunate where I've worked, again, as I mentioned earlier, some excellent nonprofits. I think I have accomplished some pretty amazing things that didn't seem possible, and that has prepared me for challenges ahead. I don't see myself not staying in this work basically for the rest of my life. It's just too rewarding. Yes, it is hard, but it is rewarding. My journey has taken me to many states. I've got to meet some excellent people, speak at some amazing venues, platforms such as this one. And it just gives me the opportunity to not only, as we mentioned just a little bit ago, engage with a huge, diverse population, but also bring people in to things that they may not have been privy to. So my life experiences has prepared me to continue in this work and to continue galvanizing communities and just continue giving back.
Best advice you've been given?
Best advice I've been given. That's a great question. that's a great question to narrow it down. The one that comes to mind, I wouldn't say it's advice. It's from a movie, and a gentleman, he basically says it's not that easy. And the character he's talking to is just like, we'll try your best. And he reiterates, no, you're told that it's not that easy. And I love that, because everyone tries to tell you that you know, if you have a dream, it's not that easy. Or if you want to accomplish this, oh, it's not that easy. It's not simple by any stretch of the imagination, but it is, but it is, if you just put in the work, you just don't quit, it turns out to being just that easy.
The role models, a few role models. I know there are many, but some of your role models.
Role models, obviously my parents, huge role models. I've gotten to witness everything that they've sacrificed to put me and my sister in the positions we are today. And then, I don't know. Man, you're coming with some really hard hitters at the end. Some really tough ones. I would stay with my parents just because, like, the empathetic part that I get from my mom, I have a big heart. I love people. I get that from my mom. And then, like, my work ethic, my drive, my passion, I get that from my dad. So I would have to say my parents.
I don't think you can go wrong on that. My guest today has been Charles Hansen. He's an exciting nonprofit leader, and he's on his way to do bigger and better things with his passion, his guidance from his parents, loving parents. He can't go wrong. Thank you, Charles, for being a guest.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
If you ever find yourself away from your favorite radio station, you can find this episode of Like It Is and many more on your favorite podcast app. I want to thank listeners who have kept Like It Is on air for 30 years. I'm here for you, and I want to hear from you. Send me a message on www.greenthumbfoundationinc.com. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.